Clouds blew away. The balloon was gone. The men were gone. The tents rippled like black rain on their poles. Suddenly it seemed a long way to town. Instinctively, Will glanced behind himself. Nothing but grass and whispers. Slowly he looked back at the silent, dark, seemingly empty tents. "I don't like it," he said. Jim could not tear his eyes away. "Yeah," he whispered. "Yeah." Will stood up. Jim lay on the earth. "Jim," said Will. Jim jerked his head as if slapped. He was on his knees. He swayed up. His body turned, but his eyes were fastened to those black flags, the great sideshow signs swarming with unguessed wings, horns, and demon smiles. A bird screamed. Jim jumped. Jim gasped. Cloud shadows panicked them over the hills to the edge of town. From there, the two boys ran alone. Chapter 13. The air was blowing in through the wide-open library window. Charles Halloway had stood there for a long time. Now he quickened. Along the street below fled two shadows. Two boys above them matching shadow stride for stride. They softly printed the night air with treads. "Jim," cried the old man. "Will," but not aloud. The boys went away toward home. Charles Halloway looked out into the country. Wandering alone in the library, letting his broom tell him things no one else could hear, he had heard the whistle and the disjointed calliope hymns. "Three," he now said half aloud. "Three in the morning." In the meadow, the tents, the carnival waited. Waited for someone, anyone, to wade along the grassy surf. The great tents filled like bellows. They softly issued forth exhalations of air that smelled like ancient yellow beasts. But only the moon looked in at the hollow dark, the deep caverns. Outside, night beasts hung in mid-gallop on a carousel. Beyond lay fathoms of mirror maze which housed a multifold series of empty vanities, one wave on another, still, serene, silvered with age, white with time. Any shadow at the entrance might stir reverberations the color of fright, unravel deep-buried moons. If a man stood here, would he see himself unfolded away a billion times to eternity? Would a billion images look back, each face and the face after that, old, older, oldest? Would he find himself lost in a fine dust, away off deep down there, not 50, but 60, not 60, but 70, not 70, but 80, 90, 99 years old? The maze did not ask. The maze did not tell. It simply stood and waited like a great Arctic floe. 3 o'clock. Charles Halloway was cold. His skin was suddenly a lizard's skin. His stomach filled with blood turned to rust. His mouth tasted of night damps. Yet he could not turn from the library window. Far off, something glittered in the meadow. It was moonlight, flashing on a great glass. Perhaps the light said something. Perhaps it spoke in code. "I'll go there," thought Charles Halloway. "I won't go there. I like it," he thought. "I don't like it." A moment later, the library door slammed. Going home, he passed the empty store window. Inside stood two abandoned sawhorses. Between lay a pool of water. In the water floated a few shards of ice. In the ice were a few long strands of hair. Charles Halloway saw, but chose not to see. He turned and was gone. The street was soon as empty as the hardware store window. Far away, in the meadow, shadows flickered in the mirror maze as if parts of someone's life, yet unborn, were trapped there, waiting to be lived. So the maze waited, its cold gaze ready for so much as a bird to come look, see, and fly away shrieking. But no bird came. Chapter 14. 3. A voice said. Will listened, cold but warming, glad to be in with a roof above, floor below, wall and door between too much exposure, too much freedom, too much night. 3. Dad's voice, home now, moving down the hall, speaking to itself. 3. Why, thought Will, that's when the train came. Had Dad seen, heard, followed? No, he mustn't. Will hunched himself. Why not? He trembled. What did he fear? The carnival, rushing in like a black stampede of storm waves on the shore out beyond? Of him and Jim and Dad knowing? Of the town asleep, not knowing? Was that it? Yes. Will buried himself deep. Yes. 3. 3 in the morning, thought Charles Holloway, seated on the edge of his bed. Why did the train come at that hour? For, he thought, it's a special hour. Women never wake then, do they? They sleep the sleep of babes and children. But men in middle age, they know that hour well. Oh God, midnight's not bad. You wake and go back to sleep. 1 or 2's not bad, you toss but sleep again. 5 or 6 in the morning, there's hope, for dawn's just under the horizon. But 3 now, Christ, 3 a.m. Doctors say the body's at low tide then. The soul is out. The blood moves slow. You're the nearest to dead you'll ever be, save dying. Sleep is a patch of death. But 3 in the morn, full wide-eyed staring, is living death. You dream with your eyes open. God, if you had strength to rouse up, you'd slaughter your half-dreams with buckshot. But no, you lie pinned to a deep well-bottom that's burned dry. The moon rolls by to look at you down there with its idiot face. It's a long way back to sunset. A far way on to dawn, so you summon all the fool things of your life, the stupid, lovely things done with people known so very well who are now so very dead. And wasn't it true, had he read it somewhere, more people in hospitals die at 3 a.m. than at any other time? Stop, he cried silently. Charlie? His wife said in her sleep. Slowly he took off the other shoe. His wife smiled in her sleep. Why? She's immortal. She has a son. Your son, too. But what father ever really believes it? He carries no burden. He feels no pain. What man, like woman, lies down in darkness and gets up with child? The gentle, smiling ones own the good secret. Oh, what strange, wonderful clocks women are. They nest in time. They make the flesh that holds fast and binds eternity. They live inside the gift. No power, accept and need not mention it. Why speak of time when you are time, and shape the universal moments as they pass into warmth and action? How men envy and often hate these warm clocks, these wives who know they will live forever. So what do? We men turn terribly mean because we can't hold to the world or ourselves or anything. We are blind to continuity. All breaks down, falls, melts, stops, rots, or runs away. So, since we cannot shape time, where does that leave men? Sleepless, staring. 3 a.m., that's our reward. 3 in the morn, the soul's midnight. The tide goes out, the soul ebbs, and a train arrives at an hour of despair. Why?
Charlie?
His wife's hand moved to his.
You? All right, Charlie?
She drowsed. He did not answer. He could not tell her how he was. Chapter 15. The sun rose yellow as a lemon. The sky was round and blue. The birds looped clear water songs in the air. Will and Jim leaned from their windows. Nothing had changed, except the look in Jim's eyes. Last night, said Will, did or didn't it happen? They both gazed toward the far meadows. The air was sweet as syrup. They could find no shadows anywhere, even under trees.
6 minutes, cried Jim. 5.
4 minutes later, cornflakes lurching in their stomachs, they frisked the leaves to a fine red dust going out of town. With a wild flutter of breath, they raised their eyes from the earth they had been treading. And the carnival was there.
Hey!
For the tents were lemon like the sun, brass like wheat fields a few weeks ago. Flags and banners bright as bluebirds snapped above lion-colored canvas. From booths painted cotton candy colors, fine Saturday smells of bacon and eggs, hot dogs and pancakes swam the wind. Everywhere ran boys. Everywhere sleepy fathers followed. It's just a plain old carnival, said Will.
Like heck, said Jim. We weren't blind last night. Come on.
They marched 100 yards straight on and deep into the midway. And the deeper they went, the more obvious it became they would find no nightmen cat-treading balloon shadow while strange tents plumed like thunderclouds. Instead, close up, the carnival was mildewed rope, moth-eaten canvas, rain-worn, sun-bleached tinsel. The sideshow paintings hung like sad albatrosses on their poles, flapped and let fall flakes of ancient paint, shivering and at the same time revealing the unwondrous wonders of a thin man, fat man, needlehead, tattooed man, hula dancer. They prowled on but found no mysterious midnight spheres of evil gas tied by mysterious oriental knots to daggers plunged in dark earth, no maniac ticket-takers bent on terrible revenges. The calliope by the ticket booth neither screamed deaths nor hummed idiot songs to itself. The train pulled off on a spur in the warming grass. It was old, yes, and welded tight with rust, but it looked like a titanic magnet that had collected to itself from locomotive boneyards across 3 continents, driveshafts, flywheels, smokestacks, and hand-me-down second-rate nightmares. It did not cut a black and mortuary silhouette. It asked permission but to lie dead in autumn strewings. So much tired steam and iron gunpowder blowing away.
Jim? Will?
Here came Miss Foley, their 7th grade schoolteacher, along the midway, all smiles.
Boys, she said, what's wrong? You look as if you lost something.
Well, said Will, last night, did you hear that calliope?
Calliope? No.
Then why are you out here so early, Miss Foley? Asked Jim.
I love carnivals, said Miss Foley,
a little woman lost somewhere in her gray 50s, beaming around.
I'll buy hot dogs, and you eat while I look for my fool nephew. You seen him?
Nephew?
Robert. Staying with me a few weeks. Father's dead, mother's sick in Wisconsin. I took him in. He ran out here early today. Said he'd meet me. But you know, boys.
My, you look glum.
She shoved food at them.
Eat. Cheer up. Rides will open in 10 minutes. Meantime, I think I'll spy through that mirror maze and...
No, said Will.
No what?
Asked Miss Foley.
No mirror maze.
Will swallowed. He stared at fathoms of reflections. You could never strike bottom there. It was like winter standing tall, waiting to kill you with a glance.
Miss Foley, he said at last, and wondered to hear his mouth say it. Don't go in there.
Why not?
Jim peered fascinated into Will's face.
Yeah? Tell us. Why not?
People get lost, said Will lamely.
All the more reason. Robert might be wandering loose and not finding his way out if I don't grab his ear.
Never can tell.
Will could not take his eyes off the millions of miles of blind glass.
What might be swimming around in there?
Swimming? Miss Foley laughed. What a lovely mind you have, Willie. Well, yes, but I'm an old fish, so...
Miss Foley.
Miss Foley waved, poised, took a step, and vanished into the mirror ocean. They watched as she settled, wandered, sank deep, deep, and was finally dissolved, gray among silver. Jim grabbed Will.
What was all that?
Gosh, Jim, it's the mirrors. They're the only things I don't like. I mean, they're the only things like last night.
Boy, boy, you've been out in the sun, snorted Jim. That maze there is...
His voice trailed off. He sniffed the cold air blowing out as from an ice house between the tall reflections.
Jim, you were saying?
But Jim said nothing. After a long time, he clapped his hands to the back of his neck.
It really does,
he cried in soft amaze.
What does?
Hair. I read it all my life. In scary stories, it stands on end. Mine's doing it. Now.
Gosh, Jim, so's mine.
They stood entranced with the delicious cold bumps on their necks and the suddenly stiffened small hairs quilled up over their scalps. There was a flourish of light and shadow. Bumping out through the mirror maze, they saw 2, 4, a dozen Miss Foleys. They didn't know which one was real, so they waved to all of them. But none of the Miss Foleys saw or waved back. Blind, she walked. Blind, she tacked her nails to cold glass.
Miss Foley?
Her eyes, flexed wide as from blasts of photographic powder, were skinned white like a statue's. Deep under the glass, she spoke. She murmured. She whimpered. Now she cried. Now she shouted. Now she yelled. She knocked glass with her head, her elbows, tilted drunken as a light-blind moth, raised her hands in claws.
Oh, God, help! She wailed. Help! Oh, God!
Jim and Will saw their own faces, pale, their own eyes wide in the mirrors as they plunged.
Miss Foley, here!
Jim cracked his brow.
This way!
But Will found only cold glass. A hand flew from empty space, an old woman's hand, sinking for the last time. It seized anything to save itself. The anything was Will. She pulled him under.
Will! Jim! Jim!
And Jim held him, and he held her, and pulled her free of the silently rushing mirrors, coming in from the desolate seas. They stepped into sunlight. Miss Foley, one hand to her bruised cheek, bleated, muttered, then laughed quickly, then gasped and wiped her eyes.
Thank you, Will, Jim, oh, thank you. I'd have drowned, I mean... Oh, Will, you were right. My God, did you see her? She's lost, drowned in there, poor girl. Oh, the poor lost sweet. Save her. Oh, we must save her. Miss Foley, boy, you're hurting.
Will firmly removed her fists from clenching the flesh of his arm.
There's no one in there. I saw her. Please, look, save her.
Will jumped to the maze entrance and stopped. The ticket-taker gave him an idle glance of contempt. Will backed away to Miss Foley.
I swear, no one went in ahead or after you, ma'am. It's my fault. I joked about the water. You must have got mixed up, lost and scared. But if she heard, she went on biting the back of her hand. Her voice, the voice of someone come out of the sea after no air, a long, dread time deep, no hope of life, and now set free.
Gone. She's at the bottom. Poor girl. I knew her.
I know you, I said when I first saw her a minute ago. I waved, she waved.
Hello. I ran. Bang, I fell. She fell.
A dozen, a thousand of her fell.
Wait, I said. Oh, she looked so fine, so lovely, so young, but it scared me.
What are you doing here? I said.
Why, I think she said, I'm real.
You're not.
She laughed, way underwater. She ran off in the maze. We must find her before...
Miss Foley, Will's arm around her, took a last trembling breath and grew strangely quiet. Jim was staring deep into those cold mirrors, looking for sharks that could not be seen.
Miss Foley, he said, what did she look like?
Miss Foley's voice was pale but calm.
The fact is, she looked like myself, many, many years ago.
I'll go home now, she said.
Miss Foley will... No, stay. I'm just fine. Have fun, boys. Enjoy.
And she walked slowly away, alone, down the midway. Somewhere, a vast animal made water. Ammonia made the wind turn ancient as it passed.
I'm leaving, said Will.
Will, said Jim. We're staying until sundown. Boy, dark sundown, and figure it all. You chicken?
No, murmured Will.
But anybody want to dive back in that maze?
Jim gazed fiercely into the bottomless sea, where now only the pure light glanced back at itself, held up emptiness upon emptiness, beyond emptiness, before their eyes.
Nobody.
Jim let his heart beat twice. I guess. Chapter 16. A bad thing happened at sunset. Jim vanished. Through noon and afternoon they had screamed up half the rides, knocked over dirty milk bottles, smashed Cupid doll winning plates, smelling, listening, looking their way through the autumn crowd trampling the leafy sawdust. And then, quite suddenly, Jim was gone. And Will, not asking anyone but himself, absolutely silent, certain sure, walked steadily through the late crowd as the sky was turning plum-colored, until he came to the maze and paid his dime and stepped up inside and called softly just one time.
Jim?
And Jim was there, half in, half out of the cold glass tides like someone abandoned on a seashore, when a close friend has gone far out, and there is wonder if he will ever come back. Jim stood as if he had not moved so much as an eyelash in 5 minutes, staring, his mouth half open, waiting for the next wave to come in and show him more.
Jim, get out of there!
Will,
Jim sighed faintly.
Let me be.
Like heck!
With one leap, Will grabbed Jim's belt and hauled. Shuffling backward, Jim did not seem to know he was being dragged from the maze, for he kept protesting in awe at some unseen wonder.
Oh, Will, oh, Willie, Will, oh, Willie.
Jim, you nut, I'm taking you home.
What? What? What?
They were in the cold air. The sky was darker than plums now, with a few clouds burning late sunfire above. The sunfire flamed on Jim's feverish cheeks, his open lips, his wide and terribly rich green shining eyes.
Jim, what did you see in there? The same as Miss Foley?
What? What?
I'm gonna bust your nose. Come on.
He hustled, pulled, shoved, half carried this fever, this elation, this unstruggling friend.
Can't tell you, Will, wouldn't believe, can't tell you, in there, oh, in there.
Shut up! Will socked his arm. Scare heck out of me, just like she scared us. Bugs, it's almost supper time. Folks will think we're dead and buried.
They were striding now, slashing the autumn grass with their shoes, beyond the tents in the hay-smelling, leaf-mold fields. Will glaring at town, Jim staring back at the high, now darkening banners as the last of the sun hid under the earth.
Will, we got to come back. Tonight.
Okay, come back alone.
Jim stopped.
You wouldn't let me come alone. You're always going to be around, aren't you, Will? To protect me.
Look who needs protection.
Will laughed, and then did not laugh again. For Jim was looking at him, the last wild light dying in his mouth and caught in the thin hollows of his nostrils and in his suddenly deep-set eyes.
You'll always be with me, huh, Will?
Jim simply breathed warm upon him, and his blood stirred with the old, the familiar answers. Yes, yes, you know it. Yes, yes. And turning together, they stumbled over a clanking, dark mound of leather bag. Chapter 17. They stood for a long moment over the huge leather bag. Almost secretively, Will kicked it. It made a sound of iron indigestion.
Why, said Will, that belongs to the lightning rod salesman.
Jim slipped his hand through the leather mouth and hefted forth a metal shaft clustered with chimeras, Chinese dragons all fang, eyeball and moss-green armor all cross and crescent. Every symbol around the world that made men safe, or seemed to, clung here, grieving the boy's hands with odd weight and meaning.
Storm never came, but he went.
Where?
And why did he leave his bag?
They both looked to the carnival where dusk colored the canvas billows. Shadows ran coolly out to engulf them. People in cars honked home in tired commotions. Boys on skeleton bikes whistled dogs after. Soon, night would own the midway, while shadows rode the Ferris wheel up to cloud the stars.
People, said Jim, don't leave their whole life lying around. This is everything that old man owned.
Something important, Jim breathed soft fire, made him forget, so he just walked off and left this here.
What? What's so important you forget everything?
Why?
Jim examined his friend curiously, twilight in his face.
No one can tell you. You find out yourself. Mysteries and mysteries. Storm salesman, storm salesman's bag. If we don't look now, we might never know.
Jim, in 10 minutes,
sure. Midway'll be dark. Everyone home for dinner, just us alone.
But won't it feel great?
Just us?
And here we go, back in.
Passing the mirror maze, they saw two armies. A billion Jims, a billion Wills. Collide, melt, vanish. And like those armies, so vanished the real army of people. The boys stood alone among the encampments of dusk, thinking of all the boys in town sitting down to warm food in bright rooms. Chapter 18. The red-lettered sign said, out of order, keep off.
Sign's been up all day.
I don't believe signs, said Jim.
They peered in at the merry-go-round, which lay under a dry rattle and roar of wind-tumbled oak trees. Its horses, goats, antelopes, zebras, speared through their spines with brass javelins, hung contorted as in a death rictus, asking mercy with their fright-colored eyes, seeking revenge with their panic-colored teeth.
Don't look broke to me.
Jim ambled across the clanking chain,
leaped to a turntable surface vast as the moon among the frantic but forever spelled beasts.
Jim!
Will, this is the only ride we haven't looked at.
So?
Jim swayed. The lunatic carousel world stirred a tilt with his lean bulk. He strolled through brass forests amidst animal rousts. He swung astride a plum dusk stallion.
Ho, boy, git!
A man rose from machinery darkness.
Jim!
Reaching out from the shadows among the calliope tubes and moon-skinned drums, the man hoisted Jim yelling out on the air.
Help! Will, help!
Will leaped through the animals. The man smiled easily, welcomed him handily, swung him high beside Jim. They stared down at bright flame-red hair, bright flame-blue eyes, and rippling biceps.
Out of order, said the man. Can't you read?
Put them down, said a gentle voice. Hung high, Jim and Will glanced over at a second man standing tall beyond the chains. Down, he said again, and they were carried through the brass forest of wild but uncomplaining brutes and set in the dust.
We were, said Will,
curious. This second man was tall as a lamppost. His pale face, lunar pockmarks denting it, cast light on those who stood below. His vest was the color of fresh blood. His eyebrows, his hair, his suit were licorice black, and the sun-yellow gem which stared from the tie-pin thrust in his cravat was the same unblinking shade and bright crystal as his eyes. But in this instant, swiftly and with utter clearness, it was the suit which fascinated Will, for it seemed woven of boar bramble, clock-spring hair, bristle, and a sort of ever-trembling, ever-glistening dark hemp. The suit caught light and stirred like a bed of black tweed thorns, interminably itching, covering the man's long body with motion so it seemed he should excruciate, cry out, and tear the clothes free. Yet here he stood, moon calm, inhabiting his itch-weed suit, and watching Jim's mouth with his yellow eyes. He never looked once at Will. The name is Dark. He flourished a white calling card. It turned blue.
Whisper.
Red.
Whisk.
A green man dangled from a tree stamped on the card.
Flit.
Shh. Dark. And my friend with the red hair there is Mr. Cougar of Cougar and Darks.
Flip, flick,
shh. Names appeared, disappeared on the white square. Combined shadow shows. Tick, wash. A mushroom which stirred moldering herb pots. And cross-continental pandemonium theater company. He handed the card to Jim. It now read, our specialty, to examine, oil, polish, and repair Death Watch beetles. Calmly, Jim read it. Calmly, Jim put a fist into his copious and richly treasured pockets, rummaged, and held out his hand. On his palm lay a dead brown insect.
Here, Jim said, fix this.
Mr. Dark exploded his laugh.
Superb! I will.
He extended his hand, his shirt sleeve pulled up. Bright purple, black, green, and lightning blue eels, worms, and Latin scrolls slid to view on his wrist.
Boy, cried Will, you must be the tattooed man.
No.
Jim studied the stranger.
The illustrated man. There's a difference.
Mr. Dark nodded, pleased. What's your name, boy?
Don't tell him, thought Will,
and stopped.
Why not, he wondered. Why?
Jim's lips hardly twitched. Simon, he said. He smiled to show it was a lie.
Mr. Dark smiled to show he knew it.
Want to see more, Simon?
Jim would not give him the satisfaction of a nod. Slowly, with great mouth-working pleasure, Mr. Dark pushed his sleeve high to his elbow. Jim stared. The arm was like a cobra, weaving, bobbing, swaying to strike. Mr. Dark clenched his fist, wriggled his fingers. The muscles danced. Will wanted to run around and see, but could only watch, thinking, Jim, oh Jim. For there stood Jim, and there was this tall man, each examining the other as if he were a reflection in a shop window late at night. The tall man's brambled suit shadowed out now to color Jim's cheeks and storm over his wide and drinking eyes with a look of rain instead of the sharp cat green they always were. Jim stood like a runner who has come a long way, fever in his mouth, hands open to receive any gift. And right now it was a gift of pictures twitched in pantomime, as Mr. Dark made his illustrations jerk cold-skinned over his warm-pulsed wrist, as the stars came out above, and Jim stared, and Will could not see, and a long way off the last of the town people went away toward town in their warm cars, and Jim said faintly, Gosh! And Mr. Dark rolled down his sleeve. Show's over. Supper time. Carnival's shut up until 7. Everyone out. Come back, Simon, and ride the merry-go-round when it's fixed. Take this card. Free ride. Jim stared at the hidden wrist and put the card in his pocket. So long. Jim ran. Will ran. Jim whirled, glanced back, leaped, and for the second time in the hour, vanished. Will looked up into the tree where Jim squirmed on a limb hidden. He looked back. Mr. Dark and Mr. Cougar were turned away, busy with the merry-go-round.
Quick, Will! Jim! They'll see you! Jump!
Will jumped. Jim hauled him up. The great tree shook. A wind roared by in the sky. Jim helped him cling, gasping among the branches.
Jim, we don't belong here. Shut up! Look! Whispered Jim.
Somewhere in the carousel machinery there were taps and brass knockings, a faint squeal and whistle of calliope steam.
What was on his arm, Jim?
A picture.
Yeah, but what kind?
It was... Jim shut his eyes.
It was a picture of a
snake,
that's it, snake.
But when he opened his eyes, he would not look at Will.
Okay, if you don't want to tell me.
I told you, Will, a snake. I'll get him to show it to you later. You want that? No, thought Will, I don't want that. He looked down at the billion footprints left in the sawdust on the empty midway, and suddenly it was a lot closer to midnight than to noon.
I'm going home.
Sure, Will, go on. Mirror mazes, old teacher ladies, lost lightning rod bags, lightning rod salesmen disappear, snake pictures dancing, unbroken merry-go-rounds, and you want to go home.
Sure, old friend, Will, so long.
Will started down the tree and froze.
All clear, cried a voice below. Clear, someone shouted at the far end of the midway.
Mr. Dark moved, not 50 feet away, to a red control box near the merry-go-round ticket booth. He glared in all directions. He glared into the tree. Will hugged. Jim hugged the limb, tightened into smallness.
Start up!
With a pop, a bang, a jangle of reins, a lift and downfall, a rise and descent of brass, the carousel moved. But, thought Will, it's broke, out of order. He flicked a glance at Jim, who pointed wildly down. The merry-go-round was running, yes, but it was running backward. The small calliope inside the carousel machinery rattle-snapped its nervous stallion shivering drums, clashed its harvest moon cymbals, toothed its castanets,
and throatily choked and sobbed its reeds, whistles, and baroque flutes.
The music, Will thought. It's backwards, too.
Mr. Dark jerked about, glanced up as if he had heard Will's thought. A wind shook the trees in black tumults.
Mr. Dark shrugged and looked away. The carousel wheeled faster, shrieking, plunging, going roundabout back.
Now Mr. Cougar, with his flaming red hair and fire-blue eyes, was pacing the midway, making a last check. He stood under their tree. Will could have let spit down on him. Then the calliope gave a particularly violent cry of foul murder which made dogs howl in far countries, and Mr. Cougar, spinning, ran and leaped on the back-whirling universe of animals who, tail-first, head-last, pursued an endless circling night toward unfound and never-to-be-discovered destinations. Hand-slapping brass poles, he flung himself into a seat where, with his bristly red hair, pink face, and incredible sharp blue eyes, he sat silent, going back around, the music squealing swift back with him like insucked breath.
The music, thought Will. What is it? And how do I know it's backside first?
He hugged the limb, tried to catch the tune, then hum it forward in his head. But the brass bells, the drums, hammered his chest, revved his heart so he felt his pulse reverse, his blood turn back in perverse thrusts through all his flesh, so he was nearly shaken free to fall, so all he did was clutch, hang pale, and drink the sight of the backward-turning machine and Mr. Dark, alert at the controls on the sidelines. It was Jim who first noticed the new thing happening, for he kicked Will once. Will looked over, and Jim nodded frantically at the man in the machine as he came around the next time. Mr. Cougar's face was melting like pink wax. His hands were becoming doll's hands. His bones sank away beneath his clothes. His clothes then shrank down to fit his dwindling frame. His face flickered, going, and each time around, he melted more. Will saw Jim's head shift, circling. The carousel wheeled, a great back-drifting lunar dream, the horses thrusting, the music in-gasped after, while Mr. Cougar, as simple as shadows, as simple as light, as simple as time, got younger and younger and younger. Each time he wheeled to view, he sat alone with his bones, which shaped like warm candles burning away to tender years. He gazed serenely at the fiery constellations. The children inhabited trees, which went away from him as he removed himself from them, and his nose diminished, and his sweet wax ears reshaped themselves to small pink roses. Now no longer 40, where he had begun his back-spiral journey, Mr. Cougar was 19. Around went the reverse parade of horse, pole, music, man become young man fast rendered down to boy. Mr. Cougar was 17. 16. Another and another time around under the sky and trees and Will whispering, Jim counting the times around, around, while the night air warmed to summer heat by friction of sunmetal brass, the passionate back-turned flight of beasts wore the wax doll down and down and washed him clean with still stranger musics until all ceased, all died away to stillness. The calliope shut up its brassworks, the ironmongery machines hissed off, and with a last faint whine like desert sands blown back up Arabian hourglasses, the carousel rocked on seaweed waters and stood still. The figure seated in the carved white wooden sleigh chair was very small. Mr. Cougar was 12 years old. No, Will's mouth shaped the word. No, Jim's did the same.
The small shape stepped down from the silent world, its face in shadow, but its hands, newborn wrinkled pink, held out in raw carnival lamplight.
The strange man-boy shot his gaze up, down, smelling fright somewhere, terror and awe in the vicinity. Will balled himself tight and shut his eyes. He felt the terrible gaze shoot through the leaves like blown needle darts. Pass on. Then, rabbit running, the small shape lit off down the empty midway.
Jim was first to stir the leaves aside. Mr. Dark was gone, too, in the evening hush. It seemed to take Jim forever to fall down to earth. Will fell after, and they both stood, clamorous with alarms, shaken by concussions of silent pantomime, blasted by events all the more numbing because they ran off into night and unknown. And it was Jim who spoke from their mutual confusion and trembling as each held to the other's arm, seeing the small shadow rush, luring them across the meadow.
"Oh, Will, I wish we could go home. I wish we could eat. But it's too late. We saw. We got to see more. Don't we?"
"Lord," said Will miserably, "I guess we do." And they ran together, following they didn't know what, on, out, and away to who could possibly guess where. Chapter 19. Out on the highway, the last faint watercolors of the sun were gone beyond the hills, and whatever they were chasing was so far ahead as to be only a swift fleck, now shown in lamplight, now set free, running into dark.
28, gasped Jim. 28 times.
The merry-go-round, sure. Will jerked his head.
28 times I counted, it went around back.
Up ahead,